This is the Jazz Book, Volume 1. From Hollywood, another look between the covers of an unfinished book. Unfinished because it's still being written. This is Jazz Book, Volume 1. Your host, Bill Kelly.
Chapter 2, 88 Men. And it deals with several great pianists, both living and dead, who have made or who are making their mark in jazz. And we have one of the greatest jazz pianists with us today to comment on the performances we'll hear and to give us some insight into what it means to be one of the most prominent figures in modern jazz. His name? Stan Kenton. Welcome aboard.
Thank you, Bill, very much.
We'll dig into the conversation angle after we hear from Teddy Wilson and the title tune from his Verve album, I Got Rhythm. Teddy Wilson and I Got Rhythm. Well, Stan, what are your impressions of Teddy's technique, and what do you know about him? Have you known him? Do you know him personally?
I've been with Teddy numerous times. I don't know. I can't say that I know Teddy very well personally, but I know him as we all know each other in the music business. We're closer to some people than others. It's unfortunate that I haven't been as close to Teddy as I have some of the rest. But Teddy Wilson is another pianist that is one of the disciples of Earl Hines. Earl Hines somehow is unique in as much as he and his style started many of us in different directions. And Teddy Wilson was one of the first pianists that I had ever heard of when I was a kid that played in the Earl Hines idiom of piano. We like to think of Teddy as a student. He's very serious about his piano playing. He's very clean with his technique, and I think to compliment the man, I should say he's brought a lot of dignity to jazz through his presence and what he has done. Teddy is one of the fine piano players out of the Earl Hines School of Playing.
A little speculation here. What do you think would happen if you took a jazz musician like Teddy Wilson and put him in a modern orchestra like yours, for example? Would he be able to adapt to this type of jazz?
Oh, I'm sure there's not that much difference. No, the same principles apply to Teddy's playing that we apply to our music. Actually, the same basic principles that a lot of us gain from Earl Hines and Louis Armstrong.
We're going to have something by Earl Hines a little bit later on, but right now I have a record by Art Tatum, which is a Cole Porter number from his 1935 production of Jubilee. And there's a small story that goes with this. Norman Granz played at the same hall where we first met back in 1953 at the Deutsches Museum in Munich. And as a young and nervous and aspiring young reporter, I asked him, who do you think was the best jazz musician for his particular instrument? And he said, Art Tatum. Now, would you agree or disagree with this?
I wouldn't disagree at all. I don't know, as I would say, that there aren't others that have achieved just as much as Tatum has, but he isn't far wrong. I think he was very fond of Art, and they were together a great deal, and Norman did a great deal for Art Tatum, too, because sometimes a man's life gets kind of involved, and I think Norman did a lot to straighten him out. And fortunately, Norman, in the last 4 or 5 years of Art's life, recorded much of Tatum that would, of course, have been lost without him making these records.
Well, we have something right now. It's just one of those things. Thank you. Tatum, it was just one of those things. How do you rank Art in the list of jazz musicians, of jazz pianists, and throughout the history of jazz?
Well, he, to start off with a light remark here, it's been said many times that Tatum played that way because he didn't know that what he was doing was difficult. He didn't know that all the runs and so forth were very difficult. And somehow, I guess... No one was ever able to convince him that the runs and the technique, the things that he did was difficult, so he always played that way. But I think that in jazz music, because of the very nature of the music, we look to some musicians as being unique because you can't trace the people ahead of them. In other words, it's hard to tell how they were influenced or where they came from. They seem to be just out of the blue come these talents. There are several that we could mention. Another one that was unique, we could never trace or determine exactly where she came from or what was her direction or what influenced her, was Billie Holiday. Now, Tatum is the same. So anyone that plays and created as great as Tatum did, and you can look at him and say the man is original entirely, he is unique, and he always played the same way. It was too bad that Tatum lived pretty much in obscurity for about 15 or 20 years, up until the last three or four before he died. And it took some of the younger pianists through listening to Tatum's older records to go back and find out what a great pianist he was and start seeking him out and looking for him and showing interest in him. And I think that Tatum appreciated that very much in the last years that he was alive. And through Norman Granz, as we said, a lot of wonderful things were recorded. And Tatum was one of my fondest people, and we were very close friends. To use a cheap phrase, but it's been used many times, he is certainly one of the giants of American music.
Well, if that makes giants, then certainly you're one of the giants, too, because nobody could ever accuse you of being a carbon copy of anybody else, can they?
Well, I don't know. Of course, when I was a youngster playing piano, Earl Hines was my idol, as it was Teddy's, too, and I did my very best to play as much like him as possible. And I'm sure that when you hear me play today, you'll still hear evidences of Hines as I'll never possibly ever get it out of my system, not that I want to even.
Well, we promise you that Hines record in a bit, but first of all, a reminder, you're listening to Jazz Book, Volume 1. This is Chapter 2, 88 Men, Stan Kenton, our guest. And right now, let's have a small blindfold test without the blindfold. This isn't necessarily going to be easy. I'll tell you only that this artist was influenced by a Charlie Parker performance. This influence led him to become a jazz musician, that he's from an old New Mexico family, that he once served as an accompanist to Ella Fitzgerald on a European tour, and elsewhere. He's better known for his work with another jazz group, and that the tune is called Now Is the Time. Thank you. It's too bad we can't have Pete Potter here so we could say something original like, will it be a hit or a loser? Do you know who it was?
Well, maybe if we don't mention who it was and just talk about the piano part, we won't offend anybody.
All right.
We'll fly blind. But we must tell them who it is. Bill, you tell them who it is.
All right, it was John Lewis.
See, ladies and gentlemen, I just found out myself. Well, I tell you, I don't know. John is a very unusual talent. He has quite a legion of people that support him and believe in him, and I respect him a great deal for what he's achieved. But to get to the point, I think that I prefer a little bit more masculinity in jazz music. John is awfully inclined to, I don't know whether you should use the word timid or not wishing to assert himself or more or less play in a retiring way, but I like pianists that get up and shout a little bit more and are not afraid to slam that piano, because the piano is a strong thing and it can take a lot of punishment. But that is, again, taste in music. John likes that sort of thing, and he plays that way, and possibly his personality is that way. But I think that there's more projection in music from more of an outgoing musician.
Well, don't you ever get frustrated when you have one of your big bands going full blast, and you're at the piano, and you obviously can't be heard past the end of the stage? Isn't this just a wee tiny bit frustrating for you?
Well, sometimes I think, Bill, to be honest with you, I like what the band does more than I'd like what I was doing at the piano, and I think I get more fun out of listening to the band play music than listening to myself play piano. But they're very nice to me. They'll sometimes sit for minutes at a time and let me play by myself without having them interrupt. In fact, we use the piano in our orchestra more as a color instrument and not so much as a solo instrument. We use it a lot of times. I'll establish moods at the beginning of arrangements with the piano, and there'll be places that are open for solos of any length that I wish. And I sometimes feel frustrated. I don't know what I've been all these years. Sometimes it takes so many different things to make a success in the music business that I think a band leader forgets whether he's what he is. He sometimes is a promotion man, a publicity man, a promoter. He's an arranger. He's a copyist. He's a band boy. He's a piano player. And general three-sheeter for everything, but I sometimes wish that I could get everything off of my back and get back to the piano and not be concerned with anything else, because I actually really do love the instrument.
All right, now you've mentioned Earl Father Hines numerous times, and it's in, of course, all of your biographies and so forth. So let me ask you what there was about Earl Father Hines' technique that attracted you, and when did this happen?
Well, when I was a small boy, about 12 or 13 years old, and I was first exposed to jazz, there was very little of it around in Southern California where I grew up, and we were only able to find a record occasionally. In fact, anyone that had any kind of a jazz collection in the way of recordings was someone that we would try every means and manner to meet, to get acquainted with, so that maybe we could be invited to his house to hear some jazz. It wasn't then like it is now, music everywhere. I met an older musician, and he said, if you're interested in jazz music and you want to study jazz, he said, don't confuse yourself by going into all the different facets of it, because he says there are many musicians that aren't saying much in the music, and he says you'll only confuse yourself. He said there are two figures that you should study and pay attention to, because they are saying more and have put down and started more than any other figure in jazz. First was Louis Armstrong, and right next to Louis was Earl Hines, and I had really never heard of either of them. So I managed, through a friend of mine, to get to a fellow that had a hot record collection, and I asked him to play me some Earl Hines records and Louis Armstrong records. And from the very first moment when I heard Hines play, I was extremely fascinated by it, because there is a sound in his playing that comes through his touch at the piano, just as a musician gets a different sound out of an instrument, the same instrument that another fellow will. The piano, the sound that Earl got out of the piano was something that was just extremely dynamic, and so I became obsessed with finding Earl Hines records. And finally, about 10 years later in Chicago, when I finally met Earl Hines, I didn't know whether I should go up and introduce myself or not, but I finally felt that if I didn't, no one would. And as it happens a lot of times, I went up and stuck out my hand. I said, I'm Stanley Kenton, I'd like to meet you. And I felt like I was going to faint. My knees buckled, and I finally had to sit down a moment. But of course, Earl, with a big cigar and his outgoing personality, brought me out of it right away. But we're talking a little bit off the... Maybe this is a little color we're talking about here, but Hines is certainly one of the great figures. And throughout the years, we've become very close. In fact, so close that today he lies about his age. He thinks that I'm older than he. And I was born in 1912, and I was in Chicago in 1935 when he was celebrating his 35th birthday. And 3 or 4 years ago in Hollywood, he went to introduce me as a guest in one of the clubs that he was appearing, and he told them that we were almost the same age, but I had him beat for 2 or 3 years. And you know something, Bill? I think he actually believes that.
Maybe by the time we get him on Jazz Book, he'll be telling us that he was influenced by you. Here's Earl Father Hines now and Spaceship.